It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful, if foggy, Kodiak, Alaska. 47 degrees in Kodiak. A light rain is fogging through the misty rain. Out at the airport, they are back down to 1.5 miles of visibility. Keep those fingers crossed, air travelers. Coming up on the Midday Report, the Kodiak Marketplace is just about to open, at least in a soft way. Many Alaskans have faced long waits for SNAP benefits. Some improvements on that front. And as the rivers in southwest Alaska freeze, fingers are crossed for the final fuel barges who are sailing through tricky waters. Those stories, plus what's to happen to Campbell Lake in South Anchorage.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Noor Rahm. Hundreds of people were allowed to leave Gaza today for the first time since Hamas militants attacked Israel. They were allowed to enter Gaza through the Rafah crossing. John Kirby said that the U.S. has been able to secure safe passage for wounded Palestinians and foreign nationals, including Americans.
A handful of Americans are expected to depart today, and we expect again more to come in future days. The State Department has communicated directly with American citizens in Gaza over the past 24 hours to tell them to be ready to go and to await further instruction.
He called this an important first step, a significant breakthrough. Israel is defending its airstrikes on Palestinian refugee camps, saying they were targeting Hamas fighters. Israeli military officials say many were killed. Attorney General Merrick Garland says threats against Jewish, Muslim, and Arab communities are on the rise in the U.S. He says the Justice Department will move aggressively to confront and disrupt any such threats. NPR's Ryan Lucas reports.
Garland says he's seen the spike in the volume and frequency of threats against American Jews, Muslims, and Arabs in his daily security briefings. He says the arrest Tuesday of a 21-year-old Cornell University student charged with making deadly threats against Jewish students at the Ivy League school shows the Justice Department is focused on combating hate-fueled threats and violence.
The Justice Department has no tolerance for violence or unlawful threats of violence fueled by anti-Semitism or Islamophobia.
Speaking at a Justice Department event on countering hate crimes, Garland said no person or community in the United States should have to live in fear of hate-fueled violence. Ryan Lucas, NPR News, Washington.
Democrats have begun navigating how TikTok fits into their 2024 campaign strategy. Despite bipartisan concern over TikTok's ownership by the Chinese company ByteDance, more than 150 million Americans are on TikTok, but few lawmakers have joined the platform. NPR's Elena Moore reports.
By NPR's count, less than 0.5% of Congress has an active TikTok account. And while it's banned on government devices, some Democratic members are still trying to reach voters there. North Carolina Congressman Jeff Jackson is leading the way. He's racked up more than 2 million followers. He told NPR that engaging with constituents on social media is just part of his job now.
That's what our constituents want from us. They've made it very clear that they expect this from me at this point. So I don't really think of this as political gain or loss.
TikTok is notably a major hub for young Americans who are expected to play a crucial role in any 2024 election victory. Elena Moore, NPR News.
Stocks gained ground today. Just before the close, the Dow was up 221 points. This is NPR News.
Ang NPR Balita ay hatid sa inyo ng Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. Para sa kaukulang impormasyon tungkol sa aming mga serbisyo, tumawag lamang sa 481-2400.
Today's KMXT Local News is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak, a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. On the web at kodiak.org and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way, 486-4782.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. The Kodiak Marketplace will open this Friday after 2 years of construction downtown. Only a handful of residents have had a preview of what the inside looks like. KMXT's Brian Venois spoke with some of the new tenants ahead of the soft opening and has this report.
Cars are speeding through Kodiak on a recent rainy Monday as staff are busy moving into the newest and one of the biggest buildings downtown. The Islander Bookshop is one of a handful of local businesses that announced it's moving into the mall. It's relocating from a small storefront about a mile north of downtown. Melissa Halfman is the founder and co-owner of the bookstore.
Blows my mind a bit that in 2023, an indie bookstore, you know, not like in the lower 48, but on this island, you know, pretty far out there, right, can expand, triple our size.
This weekend, the bookshop is reopening in its new spot and part of a soft opening of the Kodiak Marketplace this weekend before the grand opening in May of next year. Halfman says the move also means the Islander Bookshop can reach entirely new customers.
Part of the calculation to see if we can make it a go in a larger space is that we would hopefully be able to have the folks visit the bookstore that, you know, maybe don't have vehicles or maybe they're fishing for a season.
The new location is also much closer to hotels and where cruise ships dock. Halfman says getting new tourist traffic will be huge for the store. They started moving stock less than a week before the reopening. She says the move has been near seamless so far. Longtime locals knew the spot as the AC or craft building, as it served as sort of a department store, then a grocer, but those businesses closed down. The Kodiak Area Native Association bought the building about a decade ago, and it served as a gym and storage space until it was torn down in 2021. The Blue Behemoth that replaced it now boasts two floors that span a total of over 60,000 square feet. The Native Association even moved some of their own offices to the upper floor already. Canna has mostly been known in town for healthcare, but this was a huge investment in commercial real estate. The Native Association's chief executive officer, Mike Pfeffer, says they wanted to invest in the community.
It's about the social determinants of health. It's not just about going to the doctor because you've got a runny nose, right? It's about improving the community. The social determinants of health are more important, or at least more comprehensive, right, than just going to the doctor.
Kodiak doesn't have any community lounges or places to just meet and talk like that. Pfeffer says he hopes the new building can fill that niche.
It's something that has not been in place for as long as I've been in Kodiak, and the opportunity for an investment in our people, in our programs, and in our community from Canna's perspective was a great thing to do.
So far, a toy store has already opened in the marketplace, and the bookstore will open in the coming weeks alongside a local indigenous artist who will be selling crystals, jewelry, and other art pieces. The new marketplace will also feature a bakery, a post office, a restaurant, a gift shop for the Aleutic Museum, and even a small grocery store in the next year. There's even bigger event rooms to host conferences or large gatherings upstairs. Ellen Simeonoff grew up in Kodiak and is the executive director for the Chamber of Commerce. She says it's a great focal point for downtown.
It centralizes downtown a little bit more, so you have more retail businesses next to restaurants, near coffee shops, near the hotels. It's a beautiful new building. I think it's exciting growth for our community and our economy.
She says Kodiak's downtown area didn't feel safe and was kind of run down for about the last 15 years until recently. Simeonoff says that's changing. She's noticed a major difference in the energy of the area in the last few years, especially as several new shops and restaurants have popped up.
Quality of life is everything, because you can have industry, but if you don't have quality of life to go with the industries that you have, people don't want to stay or come back.
Halfman, the co-owner of the Islander Bookshop, moved to Kodiak as a teenager and shared a similar sentiment. She says she's honored to bring some of the magic back to the area.
Just to be able to be a part of bringing back downtown and to play our role in that is, like, it's the chance of a lifetime, you know? It's so exciting.
Halfman says her favorite part of the new location is lounge, where patrons can read and preview books before buying them. The bookstore opens this Friday with a grand reopening next week. Exploring the new mall in Kodiak, I'm Brian Venois.
Many Alaskans have faced long waits for food over the last year, as the State Division of Public Assistance worked through a lengthy backlog in SNAP, or food stamps, applications. The current backlog is about 7,000 applications, according to Deb Etheridge, the division's director. During a discussion on Tuesday on Talk of Alaska, Etheridge said the division is also taking steps to streamline the application process.
We're working right now to develop an online SNAP application, which includes an individual's portal so people can just upload their information and apply online.
State Representative Genevieve Mina also has a proposal to streamline the process. During the discussion, she highlighted recent legislation she introduced, which aims to simplify SNAP applications, make more people eligible, and to reduce work for the Division of Public Assistance.
It allows a state to increase the income limit for the eligibility for SNAP from 130% poverty level to 200% poverty level. Additionally, it allows states to remove the asset test. The asset test is part of the SNAP process where they look at your savings.
Mina says the bill would allow people who need assistance to be able to start saving while still getting SNAP benefits. That would avoid what is sometimes called the benefits cliff, when a small increase in earnings or savings makes someone suddenly ineligible for benefits. The backlog has also highlighted the need for more local food production, according to Andrew Jensen. He's a policy advisor for food and energy security for Governor Mike Dunleavy. During the discussion, Jensen noted that as a policy goal for the coming year.
In the upcoming legislative session, you are going to see a package of policy proposals put forward that are designed to incentivize and really de-risk the production of food in Alaska.
Despite progress, Etheridge says it's still difficult to estimate exactly when the current backlog of applications to receive SNAP benefits will be addressed. As the rivers in southwest Alaska freeze, the final fuel barges are sailing through tricky waters. As KYUK's Sunny Bean reports, Bidas' last fuel delivery is expected in Nunupichuk this week.
The Kuskokwim and Johnson Rivers are starting to ice up, and Nunupichuk is still waiting on a fuel delivery from Vitus Energy. It's expected today. North Star Gas President and CEO John Wagner expected fuel to arrive in the community around October 20th, but the Vitus barge got stuck on the ice on its way downriver on the Kuskokwim, below Kweefluk, a day or two out from Nunupichuk.
Oh, they got hung up for a couple of days, stuck in the ice and had to wait for the stuff to move around, finally got it all freed up.
Once the crew managed to free the barge, they headed to Bethel to wait until the Johnson River by Nunupichuk had safe enough conditions. On Tuesday, they flew over the river in a plane and found conditions are good now. This is great news for Nunupichuk residents, who've been worried the barge wouldn't arrive in time for winter. This weekend, they ran out of fuel at their current fuel storage facility. They have about a month's worth of fuel at their new fuel facility, but it's not operational yet. For now, people can go to nearby villages to top off. The waiting game has been frustrating so late in the season. Wassel Brinken, the head of the village's gas station, said,
I'm pretty somewhat mad about that. Hopefully they'll learn next year.
Wagner says the company delivered to Nunupichuk last because the community filled out its paperwork last. Wagner mentioned a number of obstacles that delayed barges, including the weather and river conditions. In Bethel, I'm Sunny Bean.
The state is suing a group of homeowners over easements near Campbell Lake in South Anchorage, the latest move in a long-running clash between public access and private property. The State Department of Natural Resources lawsuit was filed in state court on Monday. It answers a federal suit two of the homeowners filed against the DNR commissioner, John Boyle. The homeowners say in their April lawsuit that easements allowing public access to the lake have led people to trespass and litter on their property. They also claim that federal law governs the lake, which was created when Campbell Creek was dammed in the 50s. The Department of Law's Dana Burke, who is arguing the state's case, disagrees.
The state contends that it is a public lake by virtue of the fact that Campbell Creek, which underlies Campbell Lake, is and always was a water of the state and prior to statehood a public water.
The state says it filed the lawsuit to protect Alaskans' right to access public waters and hopes it will resolve the long-running dispute over lake access. It's asking the judge to declare that Campbell Lake is public and to confirm the existence of public access to it. Burke says the state ultimately hopes to establish a balance between public users' rights to visit the lake and the homeowners' private property rights against trespassers.
The important thing for us is to establish public access and public use in a manner that respects riparian rights, meaning upland owner rights, and creates a peaceful rather than a contentious situation there on the lake.
Attorneys for homeowners in the federal suit couldn't immediately be reached. In recent years, more than two dozen At-U, or Tlingit clan property items, have been repatriated to Wrangell clans, but hundreds more still sit in the collections of museums throughout the world. As KSTK's Sage Smiley reports, an ongoing effort is happening now to bring sacred clan property home.
A man crouches, swings his head, and growls through a wooden vocal magnifier in the small round doorway of Wrangell's Chief Sheikh's tribal house. He wears a grizzly bear mask, Kutzlecheit, one of the two dozen items returned to Wrangell clans in recent years from museums across the western U.S. It was part of a celebration, a ku'ik, to welcome the items home to the Nanya Ayi that took place in early September. Some of the items were part of a large collection amassed by former Wrangell educator Axel Rasmussen. Four had been seized from homes by Wrangell police in the 1930s. Repatriation is a slow and ongoing process. Museums from coast to coast hold At-U, clan property of Wrangell clans, including human remains. Returns are facilitated through the Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act, or NAGPRA, a 1990 law aimed at returning and protecting Native remains, funerary objects, and sacred objects of cultural patrimony.
I wish it was faster.
Harold Jacobs works on repatriations with the regional tribal government, the Central Council of Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska. The tribe has received hundreds of thousands of dollars of federal support in recent years to help facilitate clan item repatriations.
Central law says they have 90 days to respond to a claim.
Last year, the Portland Art Museum returned nine clan objects to Wrangell's Nanya Ayi, which were taken from them in the 1940s.
The last 2 years, of course, the pandemic held up. They were ready to come back then, but we couldn't do any travel with either institution, the tribe or the museum, because of travel restrictions.
Jacob says Tlingit and Haida had asked for the items back in 2002, 20 years before they returned to the Nanya Ayi. Clan members used some of the objects to lead dances at Celebration in 2022, the biennial festival of Tlingit, Haida, and Tsimshian cultures. Many other repatriations are in process. In early March, a museum in Maine published its intent to repatriate a Kiksedi clan helmet taken from Wrangell at an unknown date. That intent to repatriate came after representatives from the Central Council visited the museum in 2018.
An item that belongs to the clan belongs to the whole clan, and it's supposed to remain with that clan.
Hunts, Richard Oliver, is a former tribal president for the Wrangell Cooperative Association of the Kayash Kiditan clan. Earlier this year, Oliver traveled with Harold Jacobs and others to New York City to see more than 100 Wrangell clan items in the Museum of Natural History and the Museum of the American Indian.
Some of them, we don't know which clan they belong to, but we do know they came from Wrangell. Some are the Nanya Ayi possessions, Chief Sheikhs. Also, some are Kayash Kuditan we know of. But the rest was from the Emmons expedition when it came through here. They didn't have any rights to them. Some of them are shaman objects that were just taken right off of the graves.
Proving clan ownership is an important part of the repatriation process, but that can be tough when items are ancient. Kathleen Ashmilby is the curator of Native American art at the Portland Art Museum and an enrolled member of the Navajo Nation. She oversaw the return of the nine Nanya Ayi At-U in the spring of 2022.
And this case was actually kind of exceptional in a way because there was actually photographic documentation going back to the late 19th century that show the items as clan property. And that was actually really kind of exciting to be able to see the objects in their original context.
Ash Milby says museums like the Portland Art Museum take dispossession seriously, but are working to shift the historical relationship with tribes.
I think that having that federal law has really motivated museums to think more carefully about their relationships with Native communities and how they care for these objects, and also realigning their thinking about these objects as being something purely from the past and not something that's part of a living culture.
That living culture is an important reason to pursue repatriation for Oliver, the former Wrangell tribal president. He says objects should be seen, appreciated, and enjoyed.
We have a beautiful museum that really should be filled with the things that belong here. And if we have to try to build another wing to fit all these things, that would be a good thing too.
Wrangell's museum, housed at the borough-owned Nolan Center, has limited space, but is working on a grant for a new display case. Tribal council members have publicly expressed concern about storage and discussed the possibility of building another museum to house repatriated Wrangell at U and those that come home in the future. In Wrangell, I'm Sage Smiley.
Employers are still looking to fill a lot of positions. I'm Nova Safa with the Marketplace Minute. The number of job openings essentially remained unchanged between August and September, totaling 9.6 million, much higher than pre-pandemic levels. The number of people quitting their jobs and the number being laid off or fired were also unchanged. Private payroll firm ADP says the pace of hiring picked up a bit in October, with companies adding 116,000 jobs. Almost all of the gains were in the services sector and in medium-sized companies. The government's more comprehensive jobs report comes out on Friday. Promotions and sales at Taco Bell and KFC helped parent company Yum Brands boost third-quarter profit by 12%. Its Pizza Hut business struggled. I'm Nova Safo with the Marketplace Minute.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Wednesday. It is the first day of November, the year 2023. The sun rose today at 9:23. It will set again promptly at 6:22. Giving us 8 hours and 59 minutes of precious daylight, yes, under 9 hours. Our record high for this date was 56 degrees, set in 1929. Our record low was 7 degrees, set in 1917. Currently, a relatively warm 47 degrees. A light rain is fogging through a thick mist. Out at the airport, they continue to show only 1.5 miles of visibility. This afternoon, look for more rain. This rain could be heavy at times, and it's going to continue overnight and through tomorrow. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide coming up at 4:27 this afternoon of 9.7 feet. Followed by a low tide at 11:22 this evening of -0.3. Our high tide tomorrow morning will be at 6:03 a.m. and be 6.8 feet. Over on the west side, your high tide will happen at 4:55 p.m. That will be a 14.7-foot tide in Larsen Bay, followed by a low tide at 11:48 of -0.8. And your morning high tide in Larsen Bay will be at 6:10 a.m. and be 11.3 feet. Mariners, here is your weather forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side offshore, out to 15 miles. Small craft advisory through tomorrow, east winds to 30 knots today and seas to 10 feet, east 25 tonight with 10-foot seas, and east 25 tomorrow with seas coming down to 8 feet. Over in the Shelikoff Strait, gale warning through tonight. Northeast 35 today in the Shelikoff with 9-foot seas. Same forecast for tonight. And for tomorrow, northeast 30, seas to 8 feet. Here are some meetings coming up in the Kodiak Island Borough. The Kodiak Island Borough regular meeting of their assembly will be happening at the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. on Thursday. Next Tuesday, the Women's Bay Service Area regular board meeting will be happening at the Women's Bay Fire Hall at 5:30 p.m. And next Wednesday, the Planning and Zoning Commission will be having a work session in the Borough Conference Room. That's happening at 6:30 p.m. next Wednesday. These meetings are open to the public, and meeting packets are available at the Kodiak Island Borough website. Contact the Borough Clerk's office with any questions at 907-486-9310. Well, coming up on Friday, it's the First Friday Art Walk. It's going to be a dandy this Friday with different artists displaying at places like Double Shovel Cider in Kodiak, the Kodiak History Museum. The Iluktik Museum is partnering with the Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge Visitor Center. I know they have a movie they're showing, a short documentary film, at the Kodiak National Wildlife Visitor Center. Also, the Kodiak Arts Council is having their big annual artist trading card show. It's the 11th annual artist trading card show. That's happening on Friday, 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium. And don't forget to drop by the Kodiak Harvest Food Co-op. Amanda Meyer of Wild Ones Design has handcrafted items like leather earrings and recycled leather scraps made from. And the Harborside Flyby, too, going to have Kodiak artist Heather Johnson featured. Double Shovel will be showing Tyler Jackson, unique perspective of photography with mesmerizing underwater shots. At the Kodiak History Museum, they have Objects Uncovered, 14 objects from the museum collection paired with stories from Kodiak community members. That's happening from 5 to 7 p.m. on Friday. Next Tuesday, the Planning for Life's Changes seminar is going on. That's happening 6 to 8 p.m. at Kodiak College's BBB Room 128. Kodiak College is proud to host this four-part series in partnership with Hospice and Palliative Care of Kodiak. In session one on Tuesday, learn from a panel of experts in the field who will help you understand the importance of advanced health care directive, a durable power of attorney, and a will. They'll also be there to share local resources that are available. Ages 18 to 108 are welcome. Again, that's 6 to 8 p.m. next Tuesday at the Kodiak College's BBB Room 128. Also next Tuesday, the Alaska Department of Fish and Game announces the Kodiak Regional Planning Team will be meeting. That's happening at 9 a.m. via Zoom. The topics of the meeting will be an overview of the 2023 releases, egg takes and returns for Katoy Bay and Pillar Creek hatcheries, summaries of the 2023 salmon harvest, and ADF&G and KRAA data collection and research projects, as well as a discussion of designating criteria for unique and wild stocks in the Kodiak area. The meeting is open to the public and also for public participation. For additional information, including the Zoom link, contact, get your pencil out, Takoda, T-A-K-O-D-A dot Edlund, E-D-L-U-N-D, at alaska.gov. That's T-A-K-O-D-A dot E-D-L-U-N-D at alaska.gov. Also next Tuesday, the ongoing Scuttlebutt Galley Tables Workshop for Youth. That's going on from 4 p.m. to 5:30 p.m. in the Kodiak Public Library's Craft Room. It's been a free weekly storytelling workshop for students grades 9 through 12. They practice building and sharing their stories with help from experienced storytellers. For more information, call 907-486-7396. And volunteer opportunity, Many Hands Make Light Work, Canna Elder Services, and Canna Prevention are seeking youth ages 13 to 18 who would like to assist them in making this Thanksgiving season extra special for our elders. They are hosting an Elders Thanksgiving lunch, and they need your help. That's happening Wednesday, November 22nd. Volunteer time slots are 2 hours long, starting at 10 a.m., 12 p.m., and 2 p.m. For details and to sign up, contact Canna Prevention at 907-486-7396.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.